Hey, book besties, we're your host, Kelsey.
I'm Nikki.
And this is For the Shelf Podcast.
Before we get started, this podcast is intended for a mature audience. Use of profanity is a definite, along with discussions of mature sexual themes and graphic content. Listener discretion is advised.
This week, we'll be discussing House of Beating Wings by Olivia Wildsting. But first, let's get into last week's bookish news. So the first thing that's going to be kind of not a continuation of last week is LJ Andrews is getting Trap published.
That's so exciting. I love her.
Yeah, I do too. And so it's the Everseas trilogy, right? That's getting Trap published. Right,
which is the Ever King, the Ever Queen. I don't know what the third book is that's out, but it's out.
Yeah. And then she signed on to do three more. I don't know if it's three more of the same or three more just like in general.
So she signed on with Berkeley and for a 6-book deal. So they're going to republish the first three Ever King, and there's going to be three more in that series.
How much you want to bet we're going to get all six from her before we even get the 6th book from Sarah J. Maas?
I'm stumped. I'm absolutely silent. I'm like, we have no news about Sarah.
No news.
No news whatsoever, other than the book's going to be big.
Yeah.
No shit, Sarah, because you don't know how to self-edit. But, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm excited for her. I have the indie version of the Ever King. I need to get the other ones, because she's also going to be at a Polycon. So I want to get the indie versions to take with so I can have those signed.
Yeah, because it did say on her Instagram that they were going to, the indie hardcovers, I think, are no longer available for purchase and that the paperbacks are going to be like when it runs out, it's out.
You know, and that's so crazy because I was seeing a TikTok rip. TikTok. By the time you listen to this, it may or may not exist in the U.S. anymore. We'll see.
Yeah, because this is today's the 18th that we're recording, and it's tonight that TikTok
tonight.
Is supposed to
disappear. Yeah.
So, yeah.
But I saw TikTok, and it was this girl, and she was like, oh, I went thrifting. I shouldn't say where, but she, like, found a tub of all of these books, and it was the OG covers, hard covers of Throne of Glass. And then
off.
And then there was like another one. And then there was
a Barbie cover in there. I'm just joking.
No. But I have a story on that. But then there was on the side, the only book she didn't take was a hardcover of The Ever King.
Why wouldn't you take that? All you have to do is look at it and know that it's in your genre.
Yeah, she just didn't. And somebody, now that clicks, because that made sense. Because somebody was like, girl, you should have taken that Ever King. And that would make sense that now this news has come out and she should have. But no. But in one of the Facebook groups, I don't know if you're also in this one, but she said she ordered from Thrift Books. I've got to just start doing that. She ordered for Thrift Books a Throne of Glass, and it said it was in just good condition or acceptable condition. And she ordered it, and it was a Barbie cover signed.
Yeah, that they can fuck right off. They fuck right off. The only like random surprise signed Sarah J. Maas experience I've ever had in my life was actually from you, Kelsey.
And
I'm going through, it was like they got put on the bottom of these boxes, and it was like 3 weeks later that I was going through it, and I opened it up and I was like, holy shit. I'm like, we gotta give Kelsey more money, guys.
I know. I totally forgot that was signed.
I didn't even want that back.
Well, because at that point I had the Acrylipix editions. Mm. So I was okay with letting that go. But do you know how many times that I'm going to sound like an asshole? But do you know how many times that happens to me where I have a signed book and I don't even know it?
Yeah, you do sound like an asshole. But to be fair, I mean, I do a lot of thrifting, so every once in a while I'll be really surprised because something will be signed, but
yeah,
I don't ever really get new books and then I'm surprised that they're signed.
Yeah. So I'm really happy for her. I want to get the other ones before. I have the paperback because I don't know. The hardcover doesn't look any different, but I gravitate more towards paperback.
See, I'm a purist. As a book collector / reseller, yeah. I need the hardcover.
This is the first edition, first printing.
Yes, you know if it is. Although with these, like, you know, the indie self-published or print on demand, a lot of times they don't even really have a number line in there so that you can't really differentiate printing edition is. But
I feel like a lot of times with the indie edition, like the indie authors, because paperback is so much cheaper, the paperback ends up being the first edition printing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we have a copy of Dowry of Blood by S.T. Gibson, maybe, that the paperback is the first printing, and then because it was indie and then they got published traditionally.
Yeah.
Which is so interesting.
Because that's how it was with Quicksilver.
Yeah, and I thought that Discreet cover Quicksilver, I don't know if that we're still crazy about it, but like...
It'll come back when the second book goes to come out at the end of the year and they're making the movie or the TV show or whatever. And
see, I feel like that was the height of its resale value. Was like, because it was up to like $200-something at one point. I should have resold it then, but I was like, no.
Yeah, but we're holding on to it. We're going to get it signed. Yeah. And then, yeah, the closer it gets to the second book, I'm sure it'll be up there.
Don't even get me started on all the books I need for...
I know. I need a hotel.
We got to talk. Not on the pod.
Not on the pod. But yeah, we got to talk. Okay, so then a continuation from what we talked about last week. So when this is coming out, it is Happy Onyx Storm release day. Official release day. But of course, there's a lot of drama. So I'm sure you've seen that Onyx Storm had been put out early in a lot of places.
Target, mostly. Everywhere I'm seeing it, like TikTok, is like people just like picking it up from Target.
Target now has two dramas when it comes to Onyx Storm. So the first one is, yes, they were putting the books out, but they said they were doing an investigation. Their asset protection team was doing an investigation. And they said that they have found that books were put out early, but there's nothing in the system showing that any of them have been sold. Because when you scan them, and I've seen a bunch of TikToks of people taking books and taking the Onyx Storm and scanning them. Like this, I saw another TikToker girl doing it in Costco. And it doesn't let them buy it, and then the cashiers take it. But a lot of people were saying on TikTok that they were switching the covers, and they were taking off the dust jacket, and they were putting on a dust jacket from like an Iron Flame or another book, and then they were signing it that way.
You don't have the freaking dust jacket unless you're covering the dust jacket with leather.
They were either covering the dust jacket, or they were putting the dust jacket in their bag. So, essentially, they were stealing the book.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
Yeah. And so...
That's why we can't just wait. Like, it's delayed gratification, people. Like, why do we need to be assholes?
Well, then that's the other thing, because...
It's so many excitement of it, like...
I know. Like, and then you got all the people that are, like, still going after Amazon and stuff, because they're like, my book says it hasn't shipped yet. It hasn't shipped yet. It's supposed to be here Tuesday. And I'm like, they're not going to ship it until Tuesday. They can't. Like, they're physically not allowed to ship it until Tuesday. Like, some people, maybe, if you're next to or close to a distribution center that has it, like, yeah, you might get it that day. But, like, realistically, you're looking at a Wednesday or Thursday. And then, of course, don't get me restarted on the deluxe editions and the people freaking out because their orders are being changed. Whatever. It's a whole thing.
No, I still don't know what the difference between the first printing that's coming out versus the deluxe edition.
I think the first print is the deluxe edition.
So then why aren't we just calling it Onyx Storm? Why are we bothering to call it the deluxe edition?
I don't know.
That's stupid. That's just making...
Because I believe it's the one with the sprayed edge.
Okay.
And then the lettering...
First printing. That's it.
And then the lettering on the dust jacket is different. Like, it's like metallic. And then the next one will not have the sprayed edge, and I think the dust.
Just this, guys, this is our third go around with Rebecca Yarrows. We know that the subsequent second, third, and 85,000th printings are not going to have the spreadges.
Yeah. So, but the only thing is on Amazon, you could only pre-order the deluxe edition. Like, there wasn't a second option. So now all of these orders are being canceled because they don't have enough in stock. So, you know, yada, yada, yada. It's a whole thing.
So one of the things, though, that I have been pleasantly surprised to see, because I'm a member of, like, an indie bookstore owner, like, Facebook group. And I remember for Iron Flame, the indie bookstores were not getting copies. Their copies were getting canceled by the publisher, and all the copies were going to Amazon or Barnes & Noble and whatever. So these like small indie bookshops had to cancel their midnight releases and they didn't have the books to give to people. And I have not seen any instances of that this time. I think that's really great because because small bookstores already can't compete with Amazon and Barnes and Books A Mill and whatever else.
Yeah. So I'm glad to hear that. I know Books A Million has already put out like some of their merch that'll go along with Onyx Storm. So like what they already have as far as like Fourth Wing goes. So they have like little tables that are set up that'll be there. Cause like Books A Million's also doing a midnight release party.
Really?
And so are Barnes & Noble.
Well, Barnes & Noble's been doing them, but Books A Million did not do a midnight release, I don't think, for the last two.
Yeah, I know that they're doing it for this because I got the ad that's like, hey, the pre-order is sold out online, but go to your local Books A Million, see if you can buy a ticket for a party, and then you can get a pre-order that way. And then, of course, like Target has their own special edition, which is this is the second part of the Target drama. So people, like, you can see it when you look at, like, Target.com or on their app. But you can't, like, pre-order. You can't do anything with it because it doesn't go on until, like, 3 a.m. Eastern Standard Time because that's midnight Pacific Standard Time. So then it'll go on where you can, like, pre-order, order it, whatever. But people were calling their local Targets to see, or like they were asking people when they were in there to see like, hey, what's like the quantity situation going to be like? Is this going to be like another Taylor Swift thing where we have to line up early? And some are like, we're getting one copy. Some are like, we're getting three. I think the most I've seen that somebody said is they called their Target and their Target is getting 20 copies and then that's it.
See, and like the stuff I've seen on TikTok is like people posting like cases of books. Cases of Onyx Storm. So
yeah, but not the Target special edition. It's special edition that they're only getting.
Target would only be selling the Target version.
No.
But they're going to be selling both.
They're selling both.
We need to secure this. We need a plan.
I've honestly been thinking about just sleeping in the parking lot. Because like, we're not. Because like, we're going to midnight release party at BNN. And where we live, our Barnes & Noble is across the street from the Target. And then, like, we live, like, 15, 20 minutes away from that area. So, like, I'm not even going to be down there.
Yeah, but were you going to sleep in the car for 6 hours? Target doesn't open until, like, I mean...
7. They open at 7.
Okay, so what are you going to do from midnight to 7?
Yeah, just sleep in the car. I don't know.
You need to stay... No.
It's just... Well, the only reason why I'm really thinking about it is because then if I have to get up at like 6 a.m., then I have to fight the traffic. I have to try and somehow sneak out of my house without waking my dogs, my husband, my child up, and then drive all the way back down there.
Okay, or I drop Parker off at school at 7:15 a.m., then I just book it up to the... is there a Target on Cattleman? Because I'll be here, I'll be rich. Sorry, people who don't live in San Antonio.
What? Yes.
So says a Target on...
But again, like, we don't know what the quantities are. So I guess we'll get a good understanding when we go to, like, the party. And, like, we'll see what all... Because you would assume, like, all the people that are going to be at the release party are going to also probably try and get their hands on the Target edition. So we'll kind of see, like, you know, what everybody's doing in there. And I guess I'll make a decision.
We're going to talk to strangers and find out what they're doing?
Yeah.
Okay, you're going to talk to the stranger.
I'm going to stand there with my little coffee. Everybody's going to be talking about it, so we'll just eavesdrop.
Okay.
And then the last thing that I saw was Rebecca posted on her Instagram today that she's taking a break from social media, which is so sad because, like, she feels like with all of this drama that's been going on with the release of her book, like, she's not able to celebrate it. And so she's, like, just coming off of social media, like, during her release, which is sad.
Yeah, but I think she'll be fine.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, you work so hard.
Vacation, and she's always posting her vacation pictures. They're, like, everywhere. They're, like, all over the world. Her hobby and her kids.
It's just, like, instead of it being, like, a super, like, happy, like, she's being bombarded. Like, people are blaming her for the Amazon thing. And
people are fucking stupid.
Yeah, so
Pregnant company excluded. And all you listeners, obviously you have great taste if you're listening to us.
All right, so that's going to be it for bookish news. Now let's jump into the spoiler-free part of our review. So at the time of this recording, the Goodreads rating for this book is a 4.08 stars with 32,000 ratings. This book was also released in September of 2022. It's the first book in the Kingdom of Crows trilogy, which then they have a novella in between book one and two. And then they have technically books that are after the trilogy, but they're standalones. So like book four is its own book about side characters. And then book
five, same universe.
Yeah. And then book five is another standalone with different characters, but it's like all in the same timeline. So it's all.
I don't believe book five is out yet. But
no.
Book four is.
Yeah. So it's very much similar to like how Kingdom of Wicked and Throne of the Fallen is. Like they're standalones, but they happen after the events of like Kingdom of the Wicked and stuff. So same thing with like Crowns and Nyaxia.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. You can find this book on KU, Audible, and in physical form. Don't forget to use bookshop.org to get your physical copy.
In case anyone is a Spotify listener, this is not free on Spotify.
No, it's like $35.
Well, once I clicked on it to listen to it, because I was trying desperately to get like the last part finished the other day, and they were like, it's locked. And I'm like, well, fuck off. Like, I don't even care how much it costs. Like, I'm not paying for this.
Yeah. They also have done a couple of special editions. Like
this one.
Yeah. Bookish Box did a special edition right when it first came out.
I don't know. Because I put this on like my reading holiday, like wish reading list last year. And I got a special edition of it, which I was like, huh? Like, I haven't even read it. Like, where did the special edition
me?
No, it did not.
Yes, did.
My mom bought it from you.
I brought a special edition of this book into shelf.
Oh.
Because it was a Bookish Box. If it's the Bookish Box one, it came from me. Because I brought it because I was like, I don't know what this is. I'm never going to read this.
I don't believe you. Because the copy I have, my mom gave to me.
Okay, well then maybe I brought one in with like, when I bring in all my like randoms, I still had Bookish Box, and I would bring in all the ones that I wasn't interested in reading. I distinctly remember this being one of them.
Really?
This one?
Well, I guess I just didn't clock it back then.
It's like a purple cover.
I don't even know what to be honest. I have not looked at the special edition. I know this sounds terrible, but it's like, I haven't read the book, and a special edition is a book trophy. Like, you put it on the shelf and it stays there forever, and you dust it 3 times a year. Like, that's what you do with a special edition. Like, you don't read them, so I'm like, I don't remember what it looks
like. Yeah.
That makes me sound like an asshole. But I received it before I had the book. Shut up. Whatever.
All right, moving on.
All right, so we're going to get into the description of this book. Free the crows, Fallon, and they will make you queen. Until an oracle predicted my regal future, I never imagined myself rising above the curve of my rounded ears. After all, I was the magicless halfling, loved by beasts, but loathed by every pure-blooded fairy at court. Well, by all but one. Dante Reggio, Prince of Luce, has owned my heart since he gave me my first kiss. If gathering a slew of iron relics could help me overthrow the current monarch and crown his brother to rule at my side, then treasure hunting I'd go. If only the oracle had warned me what winged demon I was releasing into the world, and that I'd become this demon's obsession.
I'm just dying because here's my first experience with this book.
Okay.
So there is a...
You know, I did not read the blurb before I read the book. I just read it now.
Oh, okay.
This is my first experience with the blurb.
Okay.
Okay. Tell me.
But my first experience with the book was there's a glossary. So there's like words in, I can't remember what their language. And then there's
Lucian.
And then there's words in the crow language. And then there's like the map. And then there's a breakdown of like the history of their world. And I don't know why, but one of the first kings or whatever, his name was like Costa Reggio. And I immediately in my head said Costa Rica. And then The brother's name is Marco.
I distinctly remember this moment.
And then in my head, I was like, Marco Rubio. It's not right. But that's, I'm not kidding you. That's how I read their last name through this whole book.
Yeah, you just came in the kitchen one day and you're like, what can I read about Costa Rica? Marco Rubio. And I'm like, what? Marco Rubio is a Florida senator, I believe. Not the one we voted for, though. So,
yeah, I'm pretty sure he's Republican. But yeah, so anyways, that was my very first experience with this book. Okay. Tangent over, moving on. Genres. This is a fantasy, romance, romantasy, new adult, which I'm liking that these like newer published books are sticking to the new adult genre because that's exactly what they are. And yeah. I love that.
So we've got some trigger warnings. Did these come from the book or are these just like our trigger warnings?
These are
trigger warnings. So we have some sexual content. We have death. We have torture off page. Poverty, inhumane treatment of a certain population. I'm going to add fantasy racism here. And then mutilation, which is also off page.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get into our spice ratings. So I'm giving this 0.5 jalapeno. There's really only one scene. It's descriptive, but not completely, totally descriptive. It's not actually like a good spice. It's really kind of gross. And it's just typical man behavior where he's in it for like his pleasure and that's it.
Yeah. So I gave this a -2. And it was because of my complete lack of enjoyment for the spice. Okay. So if we're actually like rating the spice and the spice that's in it, I think you're right. Like a 0.5 to a 1. Because there is, you know, a sexual encounter and there's some like making out and whatnot. But this spicy scene rubs me the wrong way so bad that I'm like removing stars, negative stars. So basically our female main character is a virgin and she's having her first sexual experience. And this guy is a dick. Like he's like basically like just stands in front of her and like presents his just junk all up in her face.
Yeah.
And like just he grabs her. This is what pissed me off. He grabs her head and like shoves it down on him to the point where like she's like gagging. And
yeah.
She can't back up. Like he has her like so firmly. Like this is a fucking dick move. This is also not a move for beginners. Right. If he's, you know, if he's having all this sexual experience, he should fucking know better. Like that was really shitty. That, I don't know. That really pissed me off for some reason. It just was like this poor girl. Who is like, yeah, I'm gonna do it. And
she loves this man. Like, this is not just like a random encounter. Like, this is the man that she
planned like 5 years for this moment.
Yeah. Planned on losing her virginity to him. Like, she loves him. Like, and this is the only sexual experience she's ever had before. Like, he was her first kiss. And the way that the author writes the scene, it's by design. It's supposed to be like that. It's not just like, it's not like Nocticadia where the author's writing style was icky. Like this is done intentionally and it's done on purpose.
See, like this made me deeply uncomfortable to like experience this scene. And I think it was intentional. And if it was intentional, I think that really shows her strength as a writer. To be able to convey this, like, first time experience, like, so viscerally and to, like, make you as a reader be like,
on purpose,
because we've read a lot of shit that's been icky, not on purpose.
Yeah. Like I said, it's typical man behavior. Like, he's in it all for himself. He doesn't care about her.
Behavior. Like,
yeah, like, even, like, the part where he's supposed to be, like, giving her pleasure, she was like, he skipped right over the good part and like she was like, it felt okay. It wasn't like great.
Well, and then she's like, oh, so like afterwards, like he kisses her on the hand and she's like, oh, I guess when he's not overtaken by lust, he can really be a gentleman. I'm like, bitch, all he did was kiss your hand.
Yeah.
I'm like, he basically just like just, you know, like, not, didn't use that shit in there. Like, he, not gentle. Like, he did what he did for him with no regard for you and how you were going to feel. And you're like, oh, he kissed my hand. So it's okay.
Yeah.
It's not okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, that scene really just pissed me off.
I know. It did. Really, it did.
Little doggy.
It did for me too. And then, yeah, that's the only scene that is in the book. Okay, so moving on to Sweet Pino. I gave it 2 Sweet Pinos, all for, I call him Birdman Crowman. That's what I call him. But Morgott.
Which I think is what that's the demon that's being referred to.
Yeah, the demon is the crow. He's a literal crow. And his name is Morgott. But I call him Birdman or Crowman. I don't know why, I just do. And so I gave it all for him. And she'd been riding hard on horseback for days. And he has shadows. Like he can turn, he can go from a crow to a puff of smoke. And he's able to use his shadows kind of like Dorian.
Okay.
So anyways, he's kind of like him. And he gave her a massage with his phantom fingers. And I thought that was really nice. And then I also gave it a sweet pino for Kato. How did you
say Kato? Kato. Kato. I completely 100% disregarded all the pronunciation guides in the book.
Oh, I did too.
I just want you to know. So whenever we're saying it's probably not the right way. And also, I cannot focus on a single location because they all sounded the same.
Yeah.
I don't care to look it up.
So. Tiny in the Kindle.
And I'm just like...
And I couldn't see.
So we're in Fantasy Venice here, guys, which we'll get to later on. But yeah. There's a lot of Italian-sounding situation.
So I gave it for him and his love for her grandmother, because I don't necessarily want to say that it's unrequited. But I think she doesn't let herself feel for him in fear of, what could happen to him.
Oh, certainly.
I'm like, okay, I agree with you. Yeah. But he, still just, does it anyways. So, I love him.
I don't really have a solid answer for this. I put 3 sweet peppers, but it's somewhere between 2 and 3. I do like the Birdman. I don't want to talk too much about the Birdman until later, but... I did really like him, and I really enjoyed some of his scenes and his motivations. I do think that there's this, that Antony really had genuine feelings for her as well, and I think
he was
pretty sweet.
And he wasn't a total play fae.
Okay, so we're going to get to this later, but we're going to do it right the fuck now. Okay, listen, lady. Listen, Miss Wildstein. You are writing a book that takes place in Fantasy Venice with fairies and fucking serpents and a fucking demon crow man. And you want us to be fucking submerged in your story, and you want us to be there, and you want us to be like, as readers, we are in Fantasy Venice, right? She uses the fucking term play fae.
Yeah.
As in playboy, but play fae.
I read that and I said, Nikki's gonna hate it.
And I knew exactly the moment I read it, I texted you and I was like, is this the phrase that I hate? Because I fucking hate it. Also, Miss Wildstein, the phrase meet cute does not belong in Fantasy Venice either.
Yeah.
It does not belong here. I'm sorry. That belongs in your contemporary rom-com. It does not belong in your fairy Venice.
No, it definitely.
Thank you.
It took me out of the scene.
And it pissed me off. And I was just like, what are we doing here? What, you know better than this, or you should know better than this.
Yeah.
Can we stick to our genre?
Well, and that's the crazy thing, is she, I believe, is only a fantasy writer.
Well, whatever. So anyway, aspiring fantasy writers, please. That was the Zodiac Academy bullshit.
Oh, the fae
book. Yeah, no, it doesn't belong in your fantasy.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway. So yeah, also, Sweet Pino, I really liked her little friend group.
Yeah.
You know? And I thought that was really sweet. And I know that we usually do pinos for romance or whatever, but I liked her little family.
Yeah, her found family. Yeah, yeah. Sybil and Phoebus. He was my favorite. I don't know if that's actually how you pronounce his name, but I was calling him Phoebus.
Oh, yeah, because Phoebe.
Yeah.
And Phoebus the Great.
I loved him, so. All right, let's get into some tropes. So we have, it's a slow burn. I'm going to love triangle, but then Nikki kind of corrected me that it's like a love quadrangle.
Yeah, there's multiple love
interests. There's a friends to lovers, a touch her and die, and then a possible mate situation.
And then that brings us to our smell report.
Smell
report, the best part. We have kind of an interesting smell report this time. We only have one of our love interests out of all of our love interests that actually has a smell report.
Okay.
And I'm not going to say who it is.
All right.
Because I feel like that will ruin it.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
Then you'll know.
Whoever has the smell is like the main love interest. And when we're talking about Faye, is the mate, typically.
Right. So we're not going to tell you whether it is the love interest or it's not the love interest. We're not telling you. But the one man in the book that has a smell report, he smells mineral with hints of salt and musk. And he smells familiar.
It's a typical romantic-y smell report.
Salt, musk. And it's not pine.
No, it's not pine.
It's not pine.
But it is two real things and one not real thing.
I just think of like mineral springs, like a little hot, like sulfur.
Yeah.
Like in you, huh?
So a little off topic, the book I'm reading, the smell report for the MMC is two not real things.
Do tell. What are you reading?
I'm doing an audiobook, but I have like 45 minutes left in The Songbird in the Heart of Stone. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So he has a smell report of not two real things.
Okay, see, when we are reading pod books, Kelsey sets us such a brutal pace that I can only read the pod book and I don't have time to read.
And we do anything else. I'm typically the same way, but because it's on audiobook and given that now I'm having to like travel up to Tampa every day and back, that it's helping me like be able to listen. And I wasn't paying $35 for House of Beating Wings to read. So I'm saving my one Audible credit to be able to do Onyx Storm because we're going to be reading the pod book when Onyx Storm comes out. So then I will have my audiobook because I'm going to finish Songbird. And so then that'll replace my book for my drive.
I think this is why we picked this specific book for next week, because yep. I have already read it.
So that I can actually get a chance to read
it. Yep, because you've already read it, and it's short enough that, like, for me, like, I've already started it, and it's short. It's, like, 300 pages, so it'll be
easy. A few months ago, but I'm gonna go back and audiobook it.
Yeah.
For, like, a refresher.
Oh, God, guys, sorry. We're just, like, all over the place. I've seen Kelsey in days. Kelsey's been, like, out of town, so this is just, like,
yeah,
it's nice to get
it. Yeah. Yeah, I got some, like, family personal things happening, so I have not been around very much. Okay, so now let's talk about the plot, characterization, and world building. So our main like characters we have are Fallon. She's our FMC. We have Margot, aka Birdman. And then we have Dante, who's like our MMC, and then Marga is like our BMC, our bird. And then we have like a couple of side characters. So we have Anthony, who's another one of like the quadruple love, whatever. And then we have Sybil and Phoebus, who are like her best friends. So those are like the main people.
But I guess... Well, you're going to go with Fallon first, because I think you have the most to say.
Okay, so Fallon's a fucking idiot. There is no other way to describe her other than a complete fucking idiot. So she's in love with Dante. Like, everything she's doing is for Dante. So she gets this prophecy that if she releases the five crows, she's going to be a queen, right? And instead of you being like, oh, I'm going to be a queen, I'm going to be like, you know, boss bitch or whatever. She's like, I'm going to free these crows and I'm going to put Dante on the throne and I'm going to be his queen. And Dante is like, he thinks she's hot and he wants to fuck her. And then that's literally it. Like, he's, you know, like, not even hiding it from her, like, having girls all over him, like, he's having sex with girls. So he's confirmed it. He's courting a princess because he's the prince. He's courting a princess from like another kingdom. Like he like time after time after time proves he's a fucking asshole. And she's still like, he's still gonna like, I'm gonna be his queen. I'm gonna be his queen. She's a fucking idiot.
Yeah, right from the beginning, she really shows that she has no critical thinking skills. And it's not even, like, naivete. Like, she's just dumb. Like, she just literally, like, does not take a moment to process or think or like, she's so stupid.
Yeah.
Like it's not even a thought to her to be, like, so some random person is, like, this is a prophecy. And she never stops to go, like, oh, well, what could be the consequences or repercussions of this? Or, like, what does this even mean? What do I have to do? She's just like,
oh, it's literally prophecy for her. Like, nowhere in there does it say, like, that she's just going to be queen because she's going to marry a king. Like, it literally just says, you get the five crows and you're going to be a queen. Like, that's all it says. So, like, she's the one who then deduces herself.
Right. She projects her, like, inner desires on the situation.
And, like, yeah, she thinks, like, oh, it can only be Dante. And, like, that she's only going to be queen because there's going to be a king. Like, she doesn't ever think, like, for herself that, like, she's going to just be the ruler. Right? And it's so annoying because then they talk about how, and, like, she shows, like, that she generally gets pissed off that women are considered less than. But I'm like, homegirl, you just literally did it to yourself with your own prophecy.
You put yourself as the secondary character in your own goddamn prophecy.
Yeah. So she's so annoying. She's an idiot.
She also needs to understand that in this society, even though it's never okay to have, like, you know, the fantasy racism or racism in general, but you know what I mean? So she's part of the marginalized population. She's a halfling. So the fact that she even thinks, regardless, that somehow she's going to be able to marry a pure blood and become queen and sit on the throne when she's not even allowed to live in the city that the pure bloods live in.
She's not even allowed to have like long hair.
Yeah.
They have to have hair cut above their shoulders.
Right.
And
so I don't know how she thinks that, like, all of a sudden all these things are just going to change just because she wants it to be so. Girl, nothing ever changed in this world because we wanted it to be so.
Yeah. So, yeah, she's so annoying throughout the whole book. She only gets better maybe in the last, like, 20% of the book.
Yeah.
But the rest of it, she's still in, like, Delulu land. And it's so annoying. I hate this book. Because of her.
Yeah. And literally, yeah, the first, like, 70-something percent, it was just, like, shut up, like, literally, I would fall asleep every time I...
It reminded me of Spark of the Everflame and the DM or whatever her name was. Like, it was like that. Like, I got such a visual reaction to, like, not again, not another stupid fucking girl, whatever. But, yeah, I could not stand her character.
I did not like any of the characters. One of the things that I complained about constantly while reading this is I was like, there are no main characters, I'm not talking side characters, that have any real redeeming qualities. Like Dante, from the beginning, he's presented as our love interest, but right off the bat, readers, we know that he's an asshole because we can see from his actions that he is a dick.
Yeah.
And his friends are dicks, and everyone that's around him is a dick. And
yeah,
you know, I just hated them all. There wasn't a likable character until later on for me.
Well, I mean, I like Phoebus.
Okay, yes, but side character.
Yeah.
You know, side character. He's like the gay bestie. Yeah. I love that. I love that we've got some queer rep in here.
Yeah.
He married Sybil, and I like Gianna.
He thought she was going to die so he was going to chop off her arm.
Yeah.
Because they're fae, so, like, they can regrow appendages in this book. So, well, she's half fae, and so he thought, like, she got, like,
hit
iron or something, so he's gonna chop off her arm for her.
That's very sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
So then we got Morgott Birdman. He's a crow that turns into a puff of smoke, so he's just like a literal, like, little shadow daddy pro version.
Yeah.
And he changes a bit, like,
he gets
I don't
bigger.
Know if I should
no, so,
talk about it, but...
Not, like, everything, because then that goes into spoilers, but as she, like, releases a crow, like, he, because, like, they're all miniature, so they're, the crows are, like, these creatures, and they were, like, huge. And so he was broken up into, like, five crows or whatever. And so every time she, like, gets one, he gets, like, a little bit bigger.
The way you're talking about it, I just picture her, like, going to Target, like, selecting, like, putting these little crows in the basket. And she's like, I only have money for two today, and I'll come back next week.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so she has to go around, like, the kingdom or whatever to, like, unearth them and collect them. But, yeah, so then he just, like, grows into a bigger crow. The more that she gets. And then, like, he can, like, he first starts off as just, like, a regular-sized crow, and he can't communicate, and then he can, like, slowly start to, like, communicate with her. So, yeah, and we have Dante, which I put in here, so she finally, in, like, the last, like I said, 20% of the book, like, she kind of realizes that he's maybe not like this guy that she had always envisioned. And so at one point she calls him a pointy ear dickwit. And that's just what my description is of him.
Yeah, I literally wrote, he's an ass and all his friends are asses.
Yeah.
I could not stand him from the very beginning.
Yeah.
And it really bothered me that she had all these like warm fuzzies. Yeah, Delulu. Just like, just total, just like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
No, he's dead.
Okay, so the plot, it honestly, it took forever to get to it. Like, the first half of this book, it's like you're going through her, like, day-to-day life. Like, here's me going to the tavern 46 times and doing the same thing and interacting with all the same characters who then, like, don't really matter to the actual plot, like, right. Somewhat like
the book, which is usually, you know, like your info dump and your setup, was really kind of unimportant.
Yeah,
I mean, she could have done it in a couple chapters just to get the idea of like who she was and her personality.
Yeah,
we didn't need 300 pages.
No, which she does in like the first couple of chapters. She sets it all up. You figure out the prophecy and like what her goal is really quickly. And then she just, like, lingers on with, like, her, like, she works at a tavern. She interacts with this.
Not a brothel, mind you.
Yeah.
Not a brothel.
And then it's, like, yeah, it's just all the same things. Like, it could have just been those couple chapters and then move into the plot. And then maybe spend a little bit more time. Because then when we get to, like, the actual plot of her going and collecting these crows, it's, like, bam, 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 bam. It happens all in a row. So, like, if she would have spent so much time, I feel like, just with doing mundane, like, shit, then she could have spent a little bit more time in between, like, each, like, getting each crow and, like, developing character building between, like, you know, all of the other characters that come through. But instead, she's just, like, it all lumps in, and it's, like, it happens in the span of, like, 3 days. So, I don't know. I enjoyed the plot when we got there, but it just took too long to get there. Like, I was bored.
Yeah, no, I can't say it any better than you just said it. I completely agree. So that being said, oh, you know what? World building. I know we kind of touched on this already. We said fantasy Venice. Fantasy Venice, fantasy racism, halflings, whatever. The one thing that I thought that was very interesting and different about this world was The salt oaths.
Yeah.
So to find out, I guess that the fairies have a compulsion, a situation where if they taste salt, they can't lie.
Yeah.
So throughout the book, if they're being questioned or if they're making an oath or something, they do this like salt taste or whatever.
Yeah. They put salt in their mouth. Yeah. They put salt in their mouth and then they can't lie or anything like that.
Which that's that, because I wanted concrete facts, because we have this unreliable narrator, the Fallon, throughout the whole book, and I'm like, oh, God, someone give me something that's fucking true.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, because, like, that's actually within Fae lore that Fae can't lie. And so that's just usually how it is. It's like, oh, Fae can't lie. So they, like, word things so they're giving like half truths or whatever. You see that all the time. But this is right. The first time where it's like, oh, they can lie, but you give them salt and then they can't. Like that was pretty cool.
I thought that was fair.
And then, you know, you get like the traditional different views between like the nobility and then the lower class. And then like what I thought was really interesting. So yeah, they have like the waterways and canals, and then they have all the little islands that everybody lives on. And then they have like the human island. And she spends, a decent amount of time talking about like how just even traveling from like where she lives, where a lot of the halflings live, that's kind of like the slums, to then like where the humans live on their island, and they don't even get like the clean water, like they don't get anything. And like I kind of enjoyed like that big contrast in not only the royals and the nobility having like, you know, big houses and they're all pristine.
Almost like a caste system. Humans being like the untouchables or something.
Yeah. So I did enjoy like that as far as world building goes. All right. So let's get into our overall ratings. I give this book a 2. I hated Fallon. I just couldn't get over her character. There was basically only, I felt like, a tiny bit of a character growth in her. And it was almost like it was thrusted upon her and she just didn't grow herself, almost. And then I just didn't like how we had to wait until we were like 55% of the way through the book to get to the actual plot. And like her mission and prophecy. And I didn't care for it.
I gave the book 3.5 stars, which is probably shocking to you. I know, because I was so aggravated throughout this. For me, the ending redeemed the entire book. The last, 70 to 100 pages or whatever, like I was actually able to become invested in the story and like I'm the kind of reader that like I want to melt into the story. I want everything that's going on around me to disappear, and I want to feel like I'm like, you know, I'm watching this movie of what's happening. And if a book can do that for me, then great. But literally the first 70% of the book, I would pick this up, I would read 5 pages, and I would pass out.
Yeah.
Literally pass out. Like, I could not focus. I was like, fuck this. The beginning was awful, but for me, the ending redeemed itself.
It was a good ending. It doesn't end on a cliffhanger, which I thought was really nice, especially considering it's a trilogy. It left like the second book up for interpretation. I did really like the ending, but I remember, because I was ahead of you, I have it here. I got to a point where I was like, we were debating on if we should DNF it and move to something different. And I let you make the decision because you were the one who wanted to read this book.
This was my pick.
And I said, you asked me if I wanted to switch. And I said, I'll give you this sentence and you tell me if you want to switch. And one of the first sentences is, it pins my heart to my breast and funnels its beats into my nipples. I was like, ew. And it goes on, and it goes, the pink beads of flesh are so stiff, I fear they'll poke right through the sturdy fabric of my dress and tear up Dante's silken uniform.
I don't have words.
I was in fear for the rest of this book held. And luckily it wasn't, like, that was, like, the cringy part. And then, of course, like,
the play fae.
And then the, like, one, like, sex scene or whatever. But after that, it got better. And I felt a little bit redeemed at Pointy Ear Dickwit. I thought that was actually really funny. But yeah, I was definitely in fear. And you're like, no, I'm intrigued. Let's keep reading.
You know, one other thing, side note, and I don't know if this is going to make me sound dumb, But there was literally 8 or 9 vocabulary words that I had to look up in this book that I thought were like, that I just didn't know, like words I had never heard of in my entire life. And I'm just like, I read a lot. I mean, I don't sound like I'm like, I know all the words, but like I read almost 100 books last year. Like,
yeah,
like to come across that many. So I'm like, is she sitting there with a thesaurus?
I don't know.
Or did these things just come naturally and my vocabulary is just not as good? But yeah, so I did learn some words. I did learn some words.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
All right. So is it for your shelf?
So I have a physical copy and I have a special edition.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go Gats for my shelf because I have 2 copies.
Okay.
But like, aside from that, I probably would have bought it for my shelf because she's an Apollycon author and because I have read it and because I would like to, I guess, sign.
So it is for your shelf.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's for my shelf.
It is not for my shelf. I'm not going to go and purchase a copy of this book. In fact, I gave away my special edition and I don't feel like I don't regret that decision. It wasn't.
I'm going to read book 2, I think.
Okay.
I think
you let me know how that goes.
Like I said, and I just want to know what happens. And it wasn't great. It wasn't like a hardcore cliffhanger, but it did leave questions. And we'll talk about it in the spoiler review.
Yeah,
we're almost there.
Yeah.
We're almost done, guys.
Yeah.
So we'll revisit this.
Yeah. Okay, so that is our spoiler-free review of House of Beating Wings by Olivia Wildstein. As always, be sure to give us some stars, leave a comment. Let us know if there's anything that you would like us to cover in 2025. We still have a couple of open slots for our first half of the year. And then, of course, we haven't figured out anything for the back half.
We have a whole month where we're going to have some guest co-stars.
Yes.
Because Kelsey's going to be making humans come out. So if you're a listener and you're local and you want to, I don't know, get with me and not like get with me, but you know what I mean? With me and maybe let's do an episode together.
Yeah.
It's not friends. Cause I know that probably 40% of you know us in real life. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah. I will be taking a little bit of a break kind of in the summer when I give birth to my human. Just
singular.
Singular human. Okay, so join us next week for our review of One Dark Window by Rachel Gillig. And now we're going to jump into the spoiler part of our review.
Okay, so thanks for coming backstage, friends. I'm just going to continue my thought from before. So the reason I want to read book 2 is because I'm now ready for the slow burn and like for the enemies to lovers between her and Morgott. Like, I didn't know that it was possible to find a crow sexy. But, like, I was like, okay, love interest. Like I was rooting for him. And I texted you and I gave you my prediction. I was like, they're going to furk. Like, they are going to get together.
Yeah.
It's like this whole thing. And, like, when he started showing up and the more crows he got and the more, like, human-like he became and, like, I don't know. I was just like, yes.
Well, he's the die part of the trope. Because, yeah, I didn't want to give too much away with the tropes. So, obviously, you have Fallon and Dante that were the friends to lovers. And then she realizes he's a fucking idiot and he's an asshole. And so then, yeah, I would assume in book 2, it switches because she stays with Lorcan, who is Morgott, which is the crow word for majesty. And she's, like, fucking mad at him. And he's like, well, you don't get to leave. You don't get to go anywhere.
Right.
And so he like quite literally goes back into crow form, picks her up and takes her to the Sky Kingdom where you can only access via wings. She's literally stuck there.
And I loved his little epilogue, like his point of view. But okay, so the one thing that I don't understand is that every man that's not gay in this book is in love with her.
Yeah.
So, or it wants to fuck her or whatever, because there was like Antony, obviously, and Dante and now the crow god majesty. And then the fucking bully ass soldier.
Yeah.
Was in love with her too.
Yeah.
I remember his fucking name, like Sylvester or something.
Yeah.
Fuckface. But I'm just like, this girl is so stupid. And she's even described as like a great beauty, and it's certainly not her intelligence or fucking personality. Like, why is everyone into her? Like, why? Why?
I don't know. I think like part of her, and so she is described as being magicless. Like, she has this affinity to be able to communicate or whatever and bond with animals, but she doesn't have like the magic of the fae. Well, I think part of like the charm, when we get clarification on who she is, what she is, who her parents are, I think that's part of it. Like, I think that it's not just like she has like this charm. This is my prediction, is that she doesn't just have this charm with like animals, but that's just like part of like her power. It's just the ability to just draw people into her, or draw people right. and things to her.
Or maybe because she's different. Maybe because she has purple eyes, which no one else has.
Yeah.
And she doesn't have power. And maybe the men are like, oh, we have to protect her because she doesn't have power.
Yeah.
She's just a woman. I don't know.
But, okay, so let's get into a couple of the other things. So we learn that Morgott and Lorkin, so Lorkin is the king of the crows. And that's the thing, right? They're men. If you're a crow, you're a man, but then you turn into, and it's not just men, it's women and men. It's that species can then turn into crows. So they're bound by, it's like a curse or something. And then if they touch obsidian, then they turn into like a metal crow and they're like stuck in that form and they can't like shift back into men. And so he's the king of them, and his crow is obviously the biggest. Or in order to trap them in their crow form, they have to be broken up into five.
I think that I could be wrong about this, but I think that the reason that everybody turned into iron crows is because he was pinned with the obsidian. Like, I feel like the curse is, like, hinged upon him.
Okay, yeah.
Because he had to speak the words to make them
funny. Yeah.
So it's when he was turned... He was dead with the obsidian and turned into an iron crow, then it turned all the people as well.
Yeah, so that's like their thing, is like he has to be broken up into five pieces and then he's dormant. And so that's what happens. And like her prophecy is, if she unites the five crows and brings him back, then she, like the prophecy is, then she will become a queen. And in her stupid fucking mind, she's like, Dante getting down on the throne, which ends up happening. It does end up.
Yeah, but he don't want you, girl. He never wanted you.
Yeah, but she doesn't want him now either.
Right. Thank God.
Yeah. So, but Lorkin and Morgott end up being the same person. So when she gets the fifth, well, she discovers it before she gets the last two crows, because Dante tells her. And then that's why she feels betrayed by him. So yeah, so she gets all the five crows. He comes together. He becomes a person. And this is like kind of like anticlimactic. So the whole thing is like, the current king's a fucking dickhead, and he murdered his own dad to get the land, or to get the crown. King Marco Rubio. And then Lorkin had promised to deliver him to the Shabans because he betrayed them. But then in order to save Fallon, he like makes a deal with Dante to just kill him. And so, yeah, like it's just like a kind of a thrown off sentence where he, like, you don't even see it. It's just like, oh, he's dead. And then
he drops his head.
Yeah, but like, it's just such a
great battle. It's no, you know, yeah. It's anticlimactic action.
And I originally thought that this book was going to end where she, like, she gets him. And then the second book would be, like, battling, like, Marco Rubio. Like, that's what
That's what I thought the second book was going to be.
And so I was like, oh, well, this is like really anticlimactic, because he's just like, boop, popped his head off from his boat. And now Dante's king.
Yeah. And they're splitting the kingdom.
Yeah.
So that's cool, I guess. I don't know. They're going to get together. Oh. And the maids thing. Let's talk about the maids. That I picked up on.
Like, I clocked that real quick.
Yeah, because they were saying that, like, Bronwyn, who is the the seer or whatever.
Her aunt.
They talk about how they can speak mind to mind. And then all of a sudden, you know, I mean, he's always spoken into her mind, but then she goes into his mind and then it's like, oh yeah, duh.
They're going to be mates.
Yeah.
But then you also look at like the prophecy, and then after that you're like, well, she's going to be queen because she's going to be like, he's a king already, and so they're mates, so she's going to be a queen.
And that's why I'm interested to read the next book. I want to know how they get there.
Yeah, but then it was revealed at the very end that her parent, like her mom, is not her mom. So then I like think back to the prophecy, because that was me putting it two and two together, that they're mates and that she's going to be a queen because he's a king. But it comes out that her mom is like a shaman person.
Right, a shaman sorceress or something.
Yeah, so what if her mom was the queen of the shamans and then she's going to become the queen?
That's possible.
She's a princess. What if she's already a princess?
Right.
And then that's the other part of the prophecy.
Ooh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, I kind of just like disregarded the whole changeling thing.
Yeah, so then
she's like, whatever.
Then she was not only mad at Lorcan because she thought like he deceived her by not telling her exactly who he was, but then
he showed her the fucking dumbass. Told her, like, what's she gonna do? She's gonna freak the fuck out.
But then he, like, when he gets becoming a person, he like shows her a vision of who her actual parents are, and that's how she finds out. Like, I think that was a dick move. Like, instead of just showing her vision, he could have told her, like, separately something different. Or, like, her dad's now back because her dad was a crow. So you could have just, like, let her dad.
Yeah, but oh my God, this is that stupid trope where it's like, you didn't tell me. You knew for this long and you didn't tell me. And then we have that whole bullshit miscommunication trope to deal with later on.
Yeah, so then, like, in book two, you're wondering, so Dante is now king, and to solidify any hope that she might have had, like, for him, he looks at Valen and is like, you can't come back, so see you later. And then he, like, rides off to, like, because now he's king. So now it's like, okay, well, now what happens? Because, like, this is what would be, like, in most trilogies, like, the end. Like, you throw off the evil ruler, you're now king, and, you know, you got your thing back. So, like, they don't, it's just, I don't know. Like,
well, I don't think that the crows and the high fae are going to live peacefully. I mean, I'm sure that there's going to be some goddamn war, you know?
Yeah, so then it's like, well, what do you think is going to happen in the second book?
I think the majority of the second book is going to be them going from enemies to lovers, and her being, I think she's going to be the crow queen. I do. I do think that she's going to be the crow queen. And I think that, like, it's going to be a lot of, like, her working on, like helping the humans.
Yeah.
Because she seemed to, you know, she's really against, like, the treatment of the halflings and the humans. And
he,
you know,
she purposely stated that the parts of the kingdom that he wanted were the human lands. So, yeah, I think that's accurate. And then at some point, you know, she's going to have to go to the shamans because she's now figured out she's one of them.
Right.
And then they have the wards.
But they've got to do something with the sea serpents and get rid of the wards. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and she can talk to the sea serpents. So she's going to,
because she's
shaman. So maybe what's going to happen is she's going to help get the wards down, and then the shamans and the crows are going to get together and defeat the Rubio's brother.
Yeah, so, yeah, I guess more of my question is, like, I don't think Dante is going to be, like, the stand-up guy, and he's just going to be like, well, I'm king now, and I got, like, half a kingdom, so I'm just going to cool and be, like, chill and just rule over that. I think he's going to, yeah, I think there's going to be a war, I think, because now he is in contact with, like, the Glacian or whatever princess, like, that's who he was courting. And then Marco Rubio was getting engaged or getting married to whoever. So then, like, they're now going to be like, well, the crow murdered. You know, I think he's going to use his brother's death. Like, even though he wanted his brother dead, like, he's going to play it off. It's like, we got to go to war to avenge Marco Rubio. And he's going to get. He's going to get those other kingdoms back him. funeral. I refuse to say his name correctly.
Every time you say it, I just picture Marco Rubio.
But hey, so yeah, I think that that's going to, maybe not a second book, maybe in the third book. I don't know.
The second book, I'll let you know what happens.
Okay, yeah, I probably will not read the second book. Maybe eventually I might.
Because so many books in that world.
Well, because she doesn't seem like she's going to be a super fucking idiot in book two. So I might like her, and I might like the story, but I couldn't. She was just such an idiot in book one. So, anyways. If you've read the books, if you've read the completed trilogy, let us know. Let me know. Does it get better? Should I continue?
Right, or let me know. If you continue.
We know that Amy read the books.
My dear friend Amy, I can't trust her anymore either. Amy, I love you. If you ever listen to the podcast, I know you don't know how to use Spotify. If you ever listen to this podcast, I don't know what happened with our book taste. We were aligned for years and years, and now it's like, she likes a book, I don't like it. And if I like a book, she doesn't like it.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
We can't trust Amy.
We can't trust you, Amy.
Sorry. All right, guys, so that is going to be it for our review of House of Beating Wings by Olivia Wilding. Again, join us next week for our review of One Dark Window by Rachel Gillig. Don't forget to give us some stars. Leave us comment. Give us something.
Please. Yeah, something. Hello. Sorry I interrupted you.
No, you're
happy Onyx Storm release day, guys.
Yeah, happy Onyx Storm release day. All right, guys. We will see you next week.
Bye, besties.